guide, your concierge, your spiritual leader on this adventure, this journey that you're having into BDSM, kink, and fetish. Here on Everyday Kink, we will talk to creators, providers, insiders, to give you the inside scoop on this lovely journey that we're having. You'll get some tips. You'll get some advice. You'll get some ideas. But above all else, you'll get some great conversation. So stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, everybody of all ages, welcome to another episode of Everyday Kink. I am your host, your guide, your concierge, your spiritual leader in this lovely adventure that we call the world of kink, fetish, and BDSM. And today, you guys don't understand how big of an interview this is for me personally. As someone from the photography world, this is a very big interview for me. I'm very happy that we were able to put this together. I have the very lovely Taylor Oates, and did I pronounce that right?
You did.
Oh, I love when I get it on the first try. Now, I met Taylor as part of a boudoir photography group on Facebook. She has helped me shape my photography style. Her post flow has helped a lot of the models that I worked with. She's an all-around amazing spiritual person. I mean, in the purest essence of when you meet someone who has a great holistic spirit to them, Taylor kind of covers that with no problem. You have so much to offer that I feel like an intro couldn't do enough justice for you, but we'll just start with telling the people a little bit about who you are and what you do for those who may not be familiar with you.
Well, wow, I'm really going to have to live up to those words. I'm going to try my hardest. In a nutshell, what I do is a myriad of digital things. Mostly what you, I think, have known me for and have seen me for is being naked on the internet or shooting other people that like to be naked on the internet. I've been a sex positive content creator as long as I have legally been allowed to. And I'm a bit of a digital jack of all trades in the holistic health and wellness communities, where I work mostly behind the scenes, helping other people create their brands, deliver their messages, and get their content out there.
See that? Jack of all trades. And we're going to add in master of everything. That's what we're going to do. Jack of all trades, master of everything. We're going to change that saying around right now. Perfect. Let's start with the basics. How did you get into photography, videography, and modeling? What was the kind of catalyst for that part of your journey?
It feels like a cop-out to say that like necessity is what brought me to photography, but I've had a camera in my hands longer than I've had textbooks. And so I've always been taking photos. It started as shooting nature and just like my pets and things like that when I was a kid. But I always found that if I was the one behind the camera, I didn't have to be the one in front of the camera. And I really liked that position. And so it kind of just started from that. And then when I got farther into school and was able to acquire more skills and take it a little bit more seriously, it went from being something of a hobby to a passion to a potential career. And so it's always been in my life. And when I decided that I certainly was not going to become an English and comparative literature teacher and dropped out of that program, I went into film and I just kind of went feet first, balls first, however you want to count it, right into taking it more seriously. And it's been the main part of my income for the better part of 10 years in various forms. In terms of modeling, they kind of came up at the same time. I really wanted to get over the fact that I didn't like being in front of the camera. And so that I wanted to kind of have a more well-rounded experience with the art form and to have more empathy for the other side. And so I started just like, you know, casually doing it without any seriousness. And then naturally started gravitating towards where my energy would present the best, where my image would present the best. And given the fact that I am 5'3", all clothing looks a little bit interesting on me in photos. And so being naked tended to just be the way in which my body felt the best, looked the best, posed the best. And so I started gearing more towards boudoir and erotica, just very, very naturally. And it was never something that I intended to take seriously, but it was something that I used as a way to get with other photographers and learn from them. And essentially modeling became my way to get free one-on-one workshops. And it worked for a really, really long time. And well, it continues to if I really wanted to. But it became just like another sidestep of the outlet and of developing the practice. And then over the last couple years, it became a little bit more prominent part of my art as I started to really inject more of myself and my personality and not just my form into the images that I was appearing in.
That's good. For those who have not followed Taylor yet, one, you need to go follow on all platforms. I'm not going to be one who advises to say, go follow on. It's no, follow all the platforms and you'll see such a unique wide variety of stuff. One of the things I noticed when I was in one of Taylor's workshop videos, just the range from going from an amazing nude body to like this jar of these intense emotions. There were sometimes, there was one where it was a video you did. You were shooting in this very beautiful window. It was a very beautiful window. And you had all this space in this window. And you did this, you curled up into a ball. And there was like such like that anxiety, depression, that sadness, that just that emotion that came out, that was so just like, for a second, I forgot I was looking at a nude model and I was just like in awe of the emotion that you were able to kind of present in this form that you took, which was amazing. So I can't stop singing. I'm gonna sing your praises all throughout this video. So just be prepared for that, people. I know what you're saying. I have to, because you know when people deserve it, you gotta give them their flowers.
With that, I'm loving it. Can we start every day like this?
I mean, I can send you like a good. I'll send you a good praise audio to start off your day. So if you're feeling down, you can just go in and just click the audio, and I'll flood you with nothing but good and positive vibes.
Perfect. That's amazing.
So I know there's going to be people who are going to be wondering, how did you start your ventures into the world of kink fetish and BDSM?
Oh man, I'm going to say necessity again. Honestly, kink and BDSM have just been congruent with my sexual development as long as it's been happening. They've never felt like something that's been outside of me or something that I was like tiptoeing around. Pretty much as soon as I was sexually active, I was looking into these things and I was experimenting with these things. And it wasn't until I crossed that threshold of being legally allowed to in more public contexts that I think my experience and my interest started to expand. But I was looking at like corsets and ropes in windows and anywhere that I could see it with just like such awe and wonder from a very uncomfortably young age. And then I've just been very fortunate or very selective in terms of who I had as partners in my formative years that were always very open-minded and very willing to not only explore my side, but to show me theirs. And so I never really had vanilla relationships. And I'm really grateful to say that from the beginning up until now, it has been a wonderful world of kink and weird exploration.
So how did this background of this world of kink and BDSM and then the erotic work, and then how did all of that kind of shape the style of photography that you use? I know a lot of people, when they have different backgrounds and different likes and stuff like that, it kind of shapes how they shoot and the things that they shoot. How did this play a role in who you are as a creative?
That's a really good question. And it's something that I have thought about a decent amount. Because initially, I think I was really unconscious to how it was shaping my photography. Early on, when I was just trying to figure out how to shoot commercially, how to make money from things, I was a lot more on the fitness and like yoga side of content creation. And I was finding that not only the clients that were coming to me, but the way that we were working together, what was becoming not like inherently sexual between us as people, but in terms of the energy that we were bringing out, and that it was really positive for both sides. Like the subjects that I was shooting were feeling super empowered, like they'd been pushed to limits that they didn't know that they had, but they were super excited to be in these environments. They were really enjoying kind of like having their boundaries tested or going into such situations that otherwise would be considered maybe like indecent exposure. And so I found that these things were subconsciously coming out through my photography. And when I started really honing in on that, I was like, okay, what's happening here? And at the time, initially, I was shooting primarily women, and I realized it was like kind of this unconscious both adoration and attraction to women that I was exploring through my art that I wasn't exploring physically. And I was able to use it as both this creative tool, but this empowerment tool to work with these individuals. But I also found that it was something that was like stunting me as a result of exploring my queer desires only through art. And once I became a little bit more aware of that happening, I started to shift and make my art more deliberately about my sex and both the shortcomings and experiences that I had had. And that really started to feel like a more honest expression rather than a subconscious expression of these worlds coming together. And so that's when I kind of started to flip things over around that do more period. And instead of shooting bodies and kind of accidentally making them into erotic or submissive positions, I just started directly shooting erotic and submissive positions. And kind of, I took the internal guesswork out of it and said, like, no, this is what I am exploring subconsciously. I'm going to try and be more aware of that and bring it to the forefront and either explore it with subjects or begin to explore it more with myself. And that's where that side, like that modeling element and that self-portraiture element, became a little bit stronger when I brought it inside and said, like, if this is about what my brain is working through and exploring, it feels the safest and truest to do it mostly with myself.
So how hard was it to kind of step into this world of erotic BDSM based photography? It's for those who are not familiar with that style of photography, it's, I always tell people, it's very different from shooting your normal like nude photography or your lingerie or your fashion or anything, because there, I always feel like there's an emotion that you have to kind of portray in these pictures. There's always like this message, whether it's sexual freedom or self-confidence in your body or energy exchange and things of that nature. How hard was it to kind of get your footing in, find your style of shooting it, and kind of get into a point where it properly represents what you're trying to do?
In terms of, okay, we'll go from easiest to hardest. The emotional component of it was actually the easiest for me because I just had this background and natural inclination towards energetically heavy spaces. Am I back here?
Yeah, now you're back.
Perfect. Sorry about that.
No problem.
For me to get into it, emotionally, it was almost, it was flow, because I had naturally been working with people, pushing their boundaries with consent and with ongoing communication. I was always gravitating towards more complicated spaces that needed a little bit more awareness and attention to be held and pushed in the directions that everyone wanted them to go to. And so for me, I actually found it a lot easier to be in a room of one naked person, two naked people, people having sex, people doing like masochistic acts, because I really felt their energy more, because I feel like it's harder to lie in those contexts once you really want to start to expose truth or emotion or insecurity or vulnerability. And so that stuff, I started almost getting like a contact high off of being able to hold those types of spaces. And naturally, the art started just kind of flowing out of that. And my style started to develop as this mixture between like very removed voyeuristic, like shot very far back, very wide expansive shots to kind of like bring the environment in as a character, versus like being super, super up close and like being the thing that's whispering on the side of the sofa, being like, gotta pull her hair. And that just felt natural to me, to the fact that the first few shoots that I did of shooting couples having sex, I kept getting the same response was, oh shit, I forgot you were here. And then we would laugh about it. And then until I would like give them a cue and be like, right, like I am still here. And then finding my footing beyond energetically and creatively, I think the hardest part was to find it financially and professionally. And I spent a lot of time thinking about like, is this something that I want to do on a large scale for clients? Is this something that I'm going to kind of market as my niche and try and cast the net really wide? And I decided that I was going to stay more in the realm of shooting sex workers than I was to be shooting couples looking to explore their own intimacy. And that's not to say that I didn't do that. I just didn't want to make that my primary source of income when I was creating this type of content. I felt like there were a lot of other colleagues and photographers that were much more skilled at dealing with those emotional dynamics and holding space for people in those realms. And I was really interested in going into the places where people wanted to like push farther and maybe push farther than something I had anticipated. And so I started trying to make that my niche. And I found the challenges there to be a lot of politics and just in terms of understanding both my privilege coming into this circumstance, how it can be a benefit and a drawback, and really learning how to be both specific and careful and kind in these environments with both the working populations and their clients. And so those were all hurdles that I hadn't really anticipated or come up against before, having just been in photography going like, I'm going to capture whatever. And then as the pandemic started to come up, it became very, very difficult to be in environments where I was shooting other people. And so that's when it became more about like, how do I shoot myself? How do I make myself my own client in this regard? And that's where kind of like that last piece of how does the business element come into this and still keep the flow going? That's when it kind of started to answer itself.
I love the thing that you touched on about, you know, it's stuff that it's your love and it's your passion and figuring out the right mix to make it profitable, which is always the big question when you start doing stuff that you have a strong passion for. It's very interesting. A lot of people forget about that part when they get into the business. They always go, okay, I got this. I got the right camera. I got the right lighting. I have a good studio. I know my poses. I know all this. I know a makeup person, a hair person. And then they forget about, well, if this is something you're passionate about, you have to be honest with yourself in order to make a good profit out of it. If you're looking to make a profit out of it, to say the least. I will want to say that thanks to you, during the pandemic, I was able to not only kind of still be profitable, but I used a technique that you used for the workshops in order to help people who wanted to shoot but were afraid to go out and shoot with other people. For those who, I'll give people context. So what happened was Taylor would be part of these workshops. And for those who were able to be on it live, you could be on it live. Let me see. Bring it back. Can you still hear me?
Yep, we're good.
All right. So Taylor would be at these workshops and just be going through these amazing poses. And then every once in a while, adjust the camera so you can get another angle, another shot, and would take like ideas and things of that nature, which was awesome. The part that I love, which I feel like was the biggest part I took away from it, is the fact that if you weren't able to be on the live, you could go download a high quality video, which, you know, for those who have great 4K cameras in your phone, you can get these great high quality videos and go in and screenshot the poses you want and get these great photos out of it, as long as you know what you're doing. And I remember a model was asking, well, I want to shoot because I need to make some content, but I'm too scared to work with anybody. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I was like, well, in this group, we did this. And then they just sent the video out and then we were able to chop up the video and do what we need to do. And she was like, oh my God, why have I never thought about this? Like, I know the same thing. So it was like a great way to kind of like, because then if you're making content, you have the content of you doing the actual video, then you have the pictures from the video. So it's like I wasn't even thinking about it until, you know, I came across you and your work and the group. And during the pandemic, that came in so clutch. So clutch. Because I was doing, there's an app I have, I think it's called Close, which is all about the video photo shoot online. So it's like, I don't even realize that. I don't even know if you realize how like on the cusp and on the edge of this kind of like new style of shooting that you were.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that it was beneficial for you. And no, we had no idea what we were doing. Honestly, I have to give all credit to my live-in nerd and my partner, John, because if I hadn't had him during that time in which we had been living together for the first time, slash what we called basically being in solitary confinement, I wouldn't have thought of it either. But we started talking about just like, what could we do to up the technical quality of what we had been trying to do? Because that first workshop that I did, the posing flow, was just like totally off the cuff. I had to do a live for Do More, and I was like, okay, I'll just bend around in the window. And it was just like with the front facing camera, and everyone is like, this is beautiful, but also like, you are a tiny blown out little pixel, and please, can we figure some of this shit out? And so I was like, I can't, but I know the person that can. And so he and I started working on this streaming setup, in which we were going through, by the end of it, by the last one, we were going through his like Sony A7 III or whatever he shoots on. And we were streaming in 4K through some sort of backend that he had designed. And then it was going right to you guys. And then we had a recording of it as well. And it still blows me away to see some of those images. And first of all, just like how I loved how many different versions of the same frame came out, because everyone was watching the same feed, but depending on how they processed things, it was so different. But I still couldn't get over the quality that people were able to capture. Like some of those images are some of my favorites, and it blows my mind to think like this was taken either through a phone or through a camera, through a computer, to another person. Just like what a really interesting way to collaborate.
Well, that's one of the things I loved about it as well, outside of being very revolutionary for the time. It was a great demonstration of forcing you to think outside your box, because you had anywhere between a couple of hundred photographers and editors who were coming into contact with this video. So you had all these different versions. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, I can't edit it. I gotta do something different with this edit, because there may be 100 other people who like the same pose that I like. And I want to make sure that my edit stands out from their edit to make it look different. It was such a great exercise in thinking outside the box, or even thinking about what you're looking for. I'm going through like some of the pictures now as we're talking, and the angle choices, the pose choices, the up close, the far away. It was a great way of like looking for that different shot. And then I go, okay, I could take that. And now now that I'm shooting, you know, one-on-one with people, now I can go, I can take those same ideologies that I saw in this video and now work it into my shooting style, and then go for those close-up strange angle shots, because I know they're going to result in something beautiful and different from just like the norm. So toodles, hats off to you and John for that.
Well, thank you so much. I really love that. And I would love to see some of your photos from that. That would be a great throwback if you want to send any my way.
Oh, listen, I will send you everything.
Perfect. Perfect. Show me it all.
So when did you decide that you wanted to jump into the world of OnlyFans?
Okay. Yeah. I decided that I was going to jump in. Now I have to remember, like, what is time? I've completely lost track of years. End of 2020, I believe, was when I made my account, and beginning of 2021 was when I started taking it more seriously and pushing it on my channels and just like starting to be loud about it. And at the end of 2020, I was just getting so pent up with not being able to go out into the public scene, not being able to shoot clients. Do More had already gone through its reckoning at that point. And like, I felt a ton of grief and loss for that outlet that I had spent like half a decade, like really, really investing emotionally and physically into. And I was speaking with a friend who was kind of coaching me in business and in emotions a little bit, just like talking about like, what do I want to do? What do I want to let go into? And I had been thinking about it for a while. And especially as I had already been shooting nude for so long, I was like, it really feels like a little bit of a natural progression. We're hitting this time and precipice in which people are really normalizing this work. I have so many friends that are already doing it, that are already sex workers in one capacity or another, and like really, really loving it. And it was kind of this dual experience that happened simultaneously, where a partner that I had at the time was like, I'm going to be a pro dom. This is happening. I want your support. I want you to help me make content around this. And that just like lit my heart up. I was like, yes, I know it's a fuck yes in my system. And I'm hoping I can say that.
Listen, you can say shit, motherfucker, pussy, double dicking. You can run through the whole vocabulary here.
Oh, perfect. Oh, perfect. Well, then this is going to get blue real fast. but yeah, so I had a partner that was like, I basically want you to be like my content dom to the, like, and I'm going to be the physical dom. And I'm like, perfect. I fucking love this idea. And it lit me up. And so then I went back and I was talking with my friend who was coaching me on like, was I going to let go of a couple other clients to make space for this? Was that a crazy choice to be making? Like, as I'm on the cusp of 30, and we had a call on Monday in which he was like, you have to let go. He's like, you already understand these answers. Just do it. And he died on Friday. Ooh. And that was the last conversation that I had with him. And those words just like never left me. Even when I say this now, they give me chills. And I decided after I gave myself a week to just be in total shock, I was like, do not waste time. The message here is not about like taking in everything that he said with total sincerity, but it's about the fact that like, if you've been thinking about something, if you're contemplating it, just do it, because you don't know how much time there is. And so I let go into it in 2021, and I let go of clients to make space to make this a real part of my journey. And it's been about a year since then, since it's been like a real business endeavor for me. And it has been a roller coaster ride of both emotions and experiences.
Now, a lot of people, the OnlyFans that came a big thing, especially during the pandemic, it was like, you know, people who were traveling for shoots or to create content now had to pretty much, you know, move from just like focusing on their like premium snaps and stuff like that to focusing on OnlyFans. I appreciate OnlyFans because it taught a lot of creators entrepreneurship. You had to advertise. You really had to, it couldn't just be you posting a video and that's it, or you posting a picture and that's it. You had to advertise, you had to push, you had to think about quality, stuff that you're doing. So it's a great entrepreneurial thing. I wonder, what are some of the lessons you learned entering this road of OnlyFans and how it shaped your current business model?
Some of the lessons that I've learned with it are that like authenticity, whatever that means to you, is always going to be your best marketing material. And the fact that this area became very saturated very quickly creates a lot of opportunity, but a lot of fear at the same time. Like, how am I going to stand out? How am I going to compete? How am I going to do X, Y, Z? And I was really grateful that I'd already been in content creation for so long that it wasn't really about reinventing the wheel. It was just about pivoting the focus. And in any other sector that I had worked in, there had always been competition. There had always been more competition. But what stood out was just whatever made you, you. And so I initially started looking at OnlyFans going like, okay, well, like, I feel like I'm actually a lot older than a lot of the people that are starting this point. Like, how am I going to compete in terms of like physicality and the fact that I don't have like this Instagram perfect face and blah, 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 whatever other insecure stories I told myself. And I just kept coming back to like, I have to do this with what feels like integrity and honesty, because that's what's going to keep me being able to continue doing this and not shying away from it. And so for me, that meant that I wasn't going to be collaborating with people beyond being their photographer, unless I actually had an intimate relationship with them. And so my OnlyFans became and continues to be very personal. The people that appear in the content with me are people that I have real physical relationships with. And that that was such a lesson for me in terms of going like, I'm not going to be able to play this as a numbers game. I'm going to be able to play this as a long game. And the long game online is always about like, how do you sustain what you're doing without constantly reinventing it? And so that was one of the lessons there, was just like being able to find comfort and sustainability. And then in terms of the business aspect of it, it's really no different than running any other membership website, depending on if you're selling like instructional videos on how to knit socks or like do a downward dog or whatever. It's just about creating a mechanism that you can support with the amount of time that you want to put in based on the return that you want to get out. And so it took me a lot of tinkering to figure out what that was for me, and the amount of times that I'm going like, okay, I've done this with other photos before. I've never done this with photos of me sucking dick. And so like, there's an interesting emotional element to this that I was unexpected. However, like if I just look at this going like, I need one piece of hero content a week and I need to be able to support that, and I need to give it X number of hours, and I need to get the customer service part of this X number of hours, then I just remembered like, treat it like a business, like take, there is emotion in this, but take some of that away and sit with this strategically and systematically in the same way. And therefore it will function like that. And it took me a lot of just like stepping on my own toes to get over that and be able to create something that functioned and started to scale in that same way. But I would say those are kind of like the two takeaways, like be yourself in as much as you feel comfortable and safe and confident in doing so, because that's the person that you're going to be able to be the most consistently for the longest period of time. And at the same time, on the opposite end of that spectrum, divorce yourself from the fact that this is also a business, and don't get lost in your own emotions too much. Try and compartmentalize those two things and think about them in individual times with very different lenses, if you can.
I'm going to say, when you said, I've done this before, but never while sucking dick, I always go, that's the one thing I don't think people kind of realize is that, I mean, it goes on the other end. You know, if you're a person who's, you know, is comfortable sexually with themselves, it's different. It's a different animal when you have to do it, but then you have to make sure that people can see you clearly. The audio is good. You know, it goes so much, especially if you're doing it yourself. If you don't have like the big production crew to film erotic work and to make sure things are seen, especially for your OnlyFans content, it's sort of like this big thing. Now it's like, oh my God, that's okay. Before I didn't care, you know, where my angle was. Now I got to worry about the right angle. Okay, now we're gonna have to stop. I have to switch angles. As if I'm not working multiple cameras. If I'm working multiple cameras, I gotta worry about where I'm gonna put this so that doesn't get seen, and then put that where that doesn't seen. And I just gotta make sure I don't get too wrapped up in the act itself that I forget that I'm putting this out there for people to view. So I have to give them something to view. So I can't just like get too wrapped up in it. How do you? Because it's a lot more moving pieces now than to just like explore your sexuality on your personal time. Now it's, you have a lot more to consider. How do you ride that line of making sure that, of course, you enjoy yourself because you want to enjoy what you're doing, but also that you're making sure that you're also making content and you're getting the content that your audience can see and enjoy as well?
I think that's the part that I'm probably either the worst at or like the biggest diva about, because my content initially that was going out for the first 6 months was nothing that was shot with the intention for distribution. It was just the fact that my favorite porn to watch narcissistically was my own. And therefore I had an incredibly dense catalog of content that had already been shot. And because I had been sleeping with a cinematographer for many years, it happened to just be shot somewhat well. And like, it wasn't always like with the best angle or best lighting, but there was always like real, raw emotion and intensity. And so that became the thing that I was always searching for when creating content. And even now, when I've only set up a full scale productions in which I'm being captured, where we have like multiple angles, we have a microphone, we're being conscious of lights, and it still fucks with me mentally. It really takes me out of the scenario. And I find that if I'm trying to create this balance between like, I want to be selfish and I want to be here for me and I want to be enjoying myself, but B, I cannot stomach the idea of putting out something that feels performative. And so I've pulled the shoot multiple times on full setups going like, nope, I just can't get wet, or nope, I just can't get into this. And I would rather not do it than portray something that feels contrived. That being said, it's one of the biggest pieces of feedback that I get from people where they're like, oh, we love this. However, we would like a second angle or this or that. And my answer to that is, well, you should just be lucky that you're watching any of this at all, because you are a passenger to my experience, and what a fucking lucky opportunity that is that I'm granting you, right? And so that's kind of become the ethos of my content, and that it is speaking from a place of privilege, going, I set that as a boundary with myself, going, I can't let something go out that feels performative. It's only going out if it's real. There are going to be times in which that means it's shot in 4K. There's going to be times in which that means it's shot on a phone. And if you are following me and consuming my content, you are going to get the full range of that. And if you want me to be giving some sort of like sideways blowjob in which you can see the full breadth of it and we're making eye contact and stuff, I'm not for you.
I like that. See, this is why I'm a big fan of Taylor, because Taylor has this, it's honest. You won't get this honesty, which is why I don't like editing my interviews. I like keeping them nice, raw, and fresh and in your face. But it is true. You know, as much as content creators rely on the audience to consume their work, honestly, we're not obligated to like give you every little thing that you ask for. Think of it when you go into a restaurant. You go into a restaurant, you want your steak well done. All right, that's cool. But if you go, I want my steak well done, I want to see if I want, I want the light to be at a certain, you know, certain temperature. I want the room to have this many people in it. I want this style silverware. I want this. They're going to look at you like you're crazy. And it's the same thing with content creation. I will give you a little bit, but once you start like asking for more and more and more and more stuff, hell, you should be lucky that you're getting what you're getting, because these are normally held for private moments for some people.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And like, that's where people, like, that's where custom content comes in. And I'm also terrible at that. I'm going like, based on your request, do I want to do something sexually? Probably not. But there's lots of people out there that do. And so that's where it comes down to, like, if you want something specific, open up your wallet.
It's that easy. It's not really rocket science.
It's true.
What are some of the things that you've learned about the world of content creation that you didn't know before jumping in? Like, what are the things that you go, I wish I would have knew this before I got it started?
Specifically within the world of OnlyFans?
World of OnlyFans and erotic photography. We'll cover a wide range of stuff.
What do I wish I had known? I think I wish I knew how big of a component emotions were. And that's because I jumped in without a lot of reservations. And so I didn't really think about how that my mentality isn't necessarily going to be the common denominator, especially for those that I'm dealing with. And I remember this one moment that, like, I don't know, whenever you trigger someone, it like really, I think it really stays with you. And there were these two moments with two clients. One, I was shooting in a very traditional boudoir photography studio forever and ever ago. And it was like one of my first clients that I was taking on my own. And we had a very like specific posing flow that we were going through. And I was just trying, you know, like talk in between and like create filler. And I was just like, oh, like, so what do you do? Blah, blah, blah. And like, at some point I was just like, oh, do you have kids? And she was sitting on the bed. She's like, oh my God, now I'm thinking about my children. Now this is in my brain. And I realized something that I had said that was just so innocent and otherwise in any other context would have been an innocuous question. All of a sudden sent this mom and this wife into a tailspin because she was in a much more vulnerable environment than I had registered it as. And now I had shifted her internal state, and to bring her back to the same external state that we both wanted her to be in, I had to really be conscious of the container and what I was saying and kind of like the energy that I was giving her. And there was another client that I had when I was one of my first escorts that I shot, and I was trying to get her to emote and to bring something else out on her face. And I will never forget telling her to look like she liked it and watching her skin crawl. And just like, I wanted to crawl into a hole and die.
Can I real quick?
Yeah, totally.
So you said that in a trigger. So I'm a part of a variety of Facebook groups. I watch a lot of photographer YouTube videos. And one of my favorite videos that I show every new photographer who comes to me for advice is by this photographer by the name of Michael Sasser.
And oh yeah, I love Sasser.
He does this video where he goes, things you shouldn't do at a photo shoot. And one of the things he says is, okay, now look sexy. Like, you think you're giving motivation, but when they hear it, like you said, it's that skin crawl, like, oh. So when you said that, I automatically thought about that. I'm like, oh my God, I would never think something like that would, like, especially, you know, when you're thinking you're trying to motivate someone, it's one of the things I had to learn how to, like, some things you say, you can't say certain ways because, like you said, it throws the vibe off of everything. And then it takes a bit to kind of bring your client back to where you need them to be. So I just want to interject that because it was so funny that you said that. And I was just watching that video last night as like a refresher. So that was, see, great minds. Great minds. But go ahead, continue.
No, I think that's a great point. Cause like even the concept of like be sexy, what does that mean? That's so subjective. For somebody that could mean standing fully nude, touching themselves. For another person that could be like in a hot dog mascot costume, just like spinning in circles. And so I really found that after like those experiences and even the experience like Sasser mentions of like being too vague, that the cueing that I should use has to be almost anatomical. And that I found that using words and verbiage that were more leaning on the side of like energy and physical presence, regardless of the emotion that I was trying to get them to bring out, was getting us to that place. And we were both a lot happier of the journey on the way there because it was more of a like yoga type meditation versus like, okay, I'm going to put this concept into your brain of be sexy, be submissive, instead of being like, get on your knees, bring your chest to the ground, take a deep breath in and get as flat as you can. And using more physical cues rather than psychological cues is something that has allowed me to keep my clients safe, calm, and still be able to work towards pushing those boundaries in the ways that they want to.
And that's always the big hurdle is how to push boundaries in a way where the person doesn't fall out of the mood. And it's the very fine line where it's like you're pushing them towards something that they're able to do. They may not realize it yet. And then that line where on the other side is just pushing them far past what they're willing to do. It's like that little line that separates everything, that the wrong saying, the wrong phrase could take something you meant as an encouragement to get them to take that next step to look like, you know, just utter and complete madness. So I commend you for, you know, being able to at least be honest about how, even at this point with someone as experienced as you, it's still a difficult path to travel on.
Totally. It's a super difficult path to travel on. And I think like anything regarding consent is challenging, and it's very nuanced. And I still come up against miscommunications and consent violations, both in my personal and professional life, constantly. And I think it's not about being perfect. We're never going to be perfect. It's about being able to own your mistakes, react on the fly, be conscious of body language and the subtle things that are being said, and to just keep talking and be verbal about it always. And what might be a yes in one moment might be a no in the next. And then that no might move to a yes again, based on a further question. And like, I really do look at it in the same way that I would like a BDSM negotiation. It's like, it's a moving, adapting creature, and you can't get rigid about like, well, you signed this on the contract. Well, fuck your contract. Like, I'm a human being, and the contract that we're also in together is this container in which what actually feels good and true in this moment. It's like the same way that you would do that in sex. And so I think those worlds really lend well to each other in terms of just like being conscious and present for the other energy that you're with.
Now, especially in this type of work, knowing like your lighting and your posing and everything is key. It's the chef's kiss. But since we're on this subject now, the most under-recognized skill as a photographer, outside of your equipment and camera and your software and knowing your poses and lighting, is communication.
Yep.
That is the biggest skill. And when people are listening to this, they're going to see how you have this nice kind of calm charisma to you. It comes out when you speak. I've watched many of your videos, and you always have this very approachable, relatable kind of tone whenever you speak. How was this how you were always, or did your work in photography and erotica and BDSM, did that kind of like shape how you kind of present your ideas and concept to people? Go, well, if I'm going to do this, I need to kind of get this part down pat. Or was this just a skill you've always had?
Oh, I wish this was a skill I always had. Like, I used to just be a fucking foghorn in terms of like, I'm going to deliver anything how I want to deliver it, and it's probably going to come out loud and aggressive and like, fuck this and fuck that and la da da da. Like, and then I used to just like lead with the intensity. And in terms of my cueing with people, I became really attuned to the fact that like, not only were the words that I was using changing small facial expressions, like an eyebrow would go up in a way that I didn't want to, or like they would lose tension in their face, but also volume and tone of voice. And I really started to take a lot of cues from yoga and from both my clients and from just being a student within it, and going to classes and speaking with the teacher before class and feeling like I'm talking to a different person. And then as soon as we're on the mat, they're speaking in a way where like I'm almost hypnotized and I'm naturally following what they're saying. I don't necessarily have to open my eyes to like gain the insight from their energy and from their words. And so I started really, really shifting that in terms of, well, I can say really intense things, but if I'm doing it in kind of like a more subtle tone, then I'm genuinely catering to the nervous system. I'm being more conscious about the fact that I don't want them in a state of fight or flight. I do want them in a state of rest and digest. And so my cueing started to become more yogic rather than empowerment based. And I noticed that a lot with the photographers that I would work with, where cueing would either be weak or non-existent at all. And I started to ask myself, I'm like, what, like, where does this correlation come in? And how are these people so technically skilled, but they can't communicate about it? And this is a total projection, but just also like a pattern that I've noticed, that a lot of people have found their way into photography to deal with some form of social anxiety, myself included. I, like I said off the top of this, I wanted to be behind the camera so I didn't have to be in front of it. And I feel like that's not an uncommon experience, specifically with male-bodied individuals wanting to shoot naked women. And I have found that there are a lot that have either consciously or subconsciously found their way into that niche through a desire to exhibit reverence, which is also how I got there, respectively, but not necessarily being able to hold or create the same type of energetic space to get them to where they want to be. And instead, they remain more of a passive observer versus an active participant in how things are created.
I like that. Okay. I'm debating on this next question. I want to ask it, but then I don't want to ask it, but then I want to ask it because I feel like we should be transparent. So I'm going
to... Well, you have to ask it now.
I know. That's how you make yourself ask questions that you don't want to ask. You get it set up. But I'm going to put a spin on it because you probably... I know you've answered this question. I know you've answered this question a bunch of times. So I'm going to put a spin on it so I can kind of get a different take on it.
Okay.
What did you take? What lessons did you learn from the whole Do More experience?
From which part of it? From the collapse of it?
The whole thing. Because a lot of people who know what happened will think of just the bad stuff. And it wasn't all bad, so I don't want to just highlight that. But I would love to know what you learned, overall from the good stuff and the bad stuff, and how it has affected how you handle yourself and your business today.
I'm going to start with the positive, because it was up until its end, it was one of the most positive influences I've had on my life, personally, professionally, artistically. And one of the biggest lessons that I took away, and it just kept integrating itself more deeply, was that you can make not only a life, but a career for yourself outside of the norm. And if you keep stepping up against fear and against resistance and against what society tells you to do, as long as you are true within yourself and working towards creating a system that you can sustain, it is doable. And they gave me so much confidence beyond the skills, beyond the technical capabilities, beyond the networking capabilities. They just gave me the belief that I didn't have to shoot weddings for a living to be able to feed myself like this. And I don't think I could have ever learned that elsewhere, especially at the time. There wasn't a community that created that type of support structure for, here's how you do it yourself, your way. And so there were so many versions of that lesson. And then on the opposite side of things, in terms of what I learned from how it all ended, was that false idols will fall, and that we had maybe created these heroes in our mind of these keepers of this space and this entity that was going to continue to feed us and nurture us. And in reality, if it's not based on truth, if it's based on false narratives, if it's based on delusions, there is no foundation. Your house is built on sand and it will always get swallowed up. Yeah. And that was one of the biggest lessons that I took, because I had such a hard time. I feel like I was the last person to let go and say, this is gone.
Well, it affected you a lot. I remember your posts from when all of that happened, and you could see how it was very crippling and damaging to who you were at that time in your life.
It truly was, yeah. And it felt like I lost quite a few things, because on one side, I lost, I was working very intimately with the founders at that point, and I was doing a lot of the day-to-day. I was doing what I thought was scaling their business, and I was loving it. I hadn't realized that it was going to even be an opportunity for me to do. And so deep in the pandemic, I not only lost this community and support, but I lost this job and this income stream. And so it hit me in terms of like, it activated my scarcity in a pretty big way. But then on the other side of things, when all of the stories were coming out about these women that had felt not necessarily physically abused, but emotionally abused or neglected or unheard or silenced, I kept looking at the fact that I had taken these two people and I had put them on a pedestal. And I had gone like, I saw you as mentors, both creatively and professionally. And if people are saying that you are damaging and disgusting, I need to look at myself, because your training, your words are deep inside me. And I need to make sure that I'm taking responsibility for the parts of that I have continued on. And it was actually through that experience that I started to realize, I'm like, shit, I've been shooting women instead of fucking women. And I should probably just go have sex with women and take this and put a pause on this to make sure that I'm not doing the same thing. And though I never was, that's where I started to become aware. I was like, my subconscious had created poses, had created circumstances in which I was shooting something that I thought was sexy that I probably wanted to engage with. And because I am a 5'3" white woman, I had a lot of privilege that I was never seen as a predator. In fact, a lot of clients would flirt with me before I would flirt with them, because it was almost exciting. But that doesn't make it right in that container. And I looked at that going like, if I had had the body of the photographer that got taken down, would I have been any less guilty just because I wasn't seen in that same light? And so it affected me in those ways of going like, I need to slow down. I need to pause. I need to look at things. I need to reflect on what is still affecting me on layers that I'm not even aware of. And yeah, it caused a lot of grief, where going to camp for the first time was, I had never been seen by so many people just like running around and being celebrated for being naked constantly. And then the second time that I was there, when I was teaching, I'd never worn my leather in public like that before. It had only ever been like a private thing that my partners would see, or that would be seen in parties, that there was definitely no documentation happening. And it was kind of like a big coming out experience to like not only stand in front of a class and talk about shooting erotica, but to then allow myself to be the subject matter as well, and to be like, this is going to be documented. This is going to be out there. I'm going to lose control of some of these things. And like, fuck it, I want it out there. And so there was this like very interesting cocktail of sads that came out. And it took me probably a year to feel like, okay, this death has been processed.
So now that you've gone through the mourning process of this all, you've kind of refound your footing and what you want to do and how you want to do it. What are some of the goals that you have for yourself? Do you want to do something like your variation of a Do More photography group to kind of give back the good things that you gained from that group? Do you want to stick on the path that you're on? What are the next steps in your journey, if you don't mind sharing them with us?
That is a great question. One that I ask myself, or try not to ask myself hourly, but it does come up. I've gone back and forth in terms of like, do I want to be the space creator? And right now where I land is no. specifically in the photography community, because I feel like there are so many other people that photography specifically is their passion, is their life. And for me, it feels very much like a vehicle and an outlet. And there's many other things that I like to do both in my art and my work that don't necessarily involve a camera. And it always kind of felt like that. And so I liked my position as support staff in Do More because it allowed me to be around something that I loved without being fully consumed by it. But that being said, the community that has started to create itself within my OnlyFans has been incredibly supportive and expansive. And it's been, I'd say 99% of the messages that I get are not about my content. They're about people wanting to talk about their own experiences or their own insecurities. And I kind of market it as the place to face fuck your shame. And I've really loved that communal aspect that has come up in terms of talking with people about bulldozing their own boundaries and getting.
Can you make that into a shirt?
I'm gonna say trademark on that now, so no one can take that. But yeah, I do believe that it needs to be on a shirt.
It just the in your faceness of it.
The question is, who's gonna wear that shirt? But we'll see.
I mean, I'm walking around with stuff from one of my favorite brands, Assholes Live Forever, and there are some stuff on that they put on their shirts that. You know, I know people are looking at me in public like, what the fuck is wrong with you, guy? What is wrong with you?
I am going to fight all of my urge right now to not Google that in the middle of this interview.
I will send you the link. And there's some stuff on there that they have a towel that I gave to someone as a joke gift that you would just crack up with. Because it's such a polite thing to put on a towel, especially for what the towel is used for.
Well, now you have to tell me what it is, or you want to keep this a surprise.
You know what? Okay, people. This is the part where my interviews go off the rail, because when you have a good connection with your guests, you do stuff like this, and then you go, you know, maybe I shouldn't have said that, but fuck it. This is why the people are here, because I don't do my interviews like normal interviews. I do them like I'm talking to a good buddy, and we have some wine or beer in front of us, and we're just talking smack. All right, let me see if I can find the cum towel.
The cum towel.
Yes. Okay, hold on. I gotta go to my order list. Where's my order list? All right, so Assholes Live Forever. I came across them because a few of my friends wear their stuff, and I was like, oh, I like some of their designs, and they're very like in your face. Like one of their shirts is like. Was it waxed and vaxed? You know, they do like a lot of that style stuff, which I always find, you know, extremely hilarious because I feel like people are too sensitive and, you know, funk sensitivity. All right, now I got to figure out where did I order the towel at? Was it this one? I think it was this one. Yes. It's the thank you for your service, cum rag. And it says, please accept this towel as a token of my appreciation. You may use it to wipe your face and body. I admired your commitment to your craft and look forward to you and your using your services again.
That is great.
It is so tongue-in-cheek that I'm like, it's, I always feel like if you're having a sexual experience, if you can't laugh, and you're good for this. You are good for this. If you can't laugh and enjoy the experience, then what the hell are you doing it for?
I totally agree. And like, that's always my personal barometer for, am I actually where I need to be? The amount of times that I have like full belly laughed in the middle of a sex act, I was like, that's how I know that I'm actually having fun and how I'm actually just letting go into something when I'm just like, ugly laughing, crying. Like I agree. If there's not laughter during sex, I'm probably bored.
Yeah. And the last thing you want to do is be bored during sex.
It's true. It's true. Otherwise I'd rather be snacking.
I would rather be snacking on all sentences. And if I can bring snacking into sex, then that's even that much better.
I get lost then because I'm like, I really enjoy these two things so much that like If there's chocolate available, I'm eating chocolate. If there's dick available, I'm eating dick. And if they're together, I get a little bit confused in terms of what's the priority.
Well, no, see, you got to set it up. Okay, so let's just say, all right, people, this is where the conversation will get very blue. So, okay, let's just say you are being eaten out by one guy and being fed chocolate dipped strawberries by another guy.
Okay. Dex and Max, you can take this as a note. That's happening.
See, it's all in how you set it up. We talked about true. This. It's about how you set it up. It can happen.
Like, that's a very good idea. I'm gonna steal this concept.
I mean, if you do, I just want creative credit for it. Just like idea given, and then you can take it and run with it.
Perfect. Yeah. By all means, I will definitely give you a tag on that scene.
Well, I love the fact that a lot of people would have taken this opportunity to like recreate or try to recreate that organization and try to like do that whole group thing. And I love the fact that you're at least honest enough with yourself to know that at this point in time, that's not your thing. And if it's happening organically, that's one thing, but to go and do it would be another. And I'm glad that you're kind of like letting things grow and flow in its own way, which is pretty much very on brand for you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it didn't, like, there was a part of me, like the business part of me was really activated at that time, being like, there's a need, there's a demand, you should do this. And that it just didn't feel honest. And like Do More wasn't the first community that I had ever like managed or done a lot of back end for. It was the first of this nature that I had. But I had kind of seen the volatility in these spaces before, and I knew that if I wanted to spearhead something, and if I wanted to be the one that's actually creating the space, I need to play in the sandbox a little bit more, and I need to look at the lessons that I have taken from other companies and from this last collapse and go like, where did they go wrong? How can I avoid that? And how can I change things? And that's where, like, specifically doing it in the photography world just didn't feel honest. I was like, my heart is not in this art form right now. And so beyond creating a new business, I have to go fall back in love with using my camera before anything else can happen.
And how's that journey been going?
It's been so good. I've been really falling back in love with all of it, and like with the learning aspect of it, with being bad at certain things again, and like actually being invigorated by that. Over the last year, I've been building a yoga brand with a friend of mine, where pretty much for the last 10 years, we've been trying to get both of our like personal and professional shit together enough to be able to do this together. And then after the scarcity of not being able to teach public classes, and she moved herself online and garnered a lot of just attention, there was this opportunity again for me to play the support role. And she was one of my first muses and one of the first people that I was just like, I cannot believe that I get to shoot this body with this energy. And so we've been creating nonstop for the last year. We've been scaling her business. We just had our best month ever. And it just feels like so many fuck yeses in a row that it actually feels like I'm like, oh, I'm coming home in so many different ways.
I like that. I like that. That reminds me, when this interview is over, I have an idea that I want to pitch for you that one of my friends brought to my attention. I'm like, ooh, this is cool, because I know people do this, but I haven't seen people actually like put this as an actual genre. We're gonna talk about that later. You guys will find out about it later too,
along the way. Oh, okay. All right. I'm excited.
But thank you so much for taking time out to do this interview. You guys knew the process of getting this interview put together. You would appreciate this whole thing a lot more. But there's traveling we had to deal with. There was a time span. It was well worth the wait. So let me say that. It was very well worth the wait to do this interview. And hopefully we can get you back to do some more interviews.
Well, yes, I appreciate your patience greatly. We started connecting at a time in which it felt like everything was in a washing machine. I have been traveling all over the place. I have been sitting with different plant medicines. And so I was like, I have to not only be in a physical place that has Wi-Fi, but I have to come back to one reality before I can open my mouth. So I greatly appreciate you being willing to work around my schedule. And yes, you can certainly have me back whenever you would like.
Yes. Well, everybody, thank you for tuning in. Taylor, I'm going to give you one last, I call this the promo pitch part of our show. This is your chance to pitch anything, any upcoming projects, all your social links. I'm also going to include those in the bio. So if you don't want to do that, they'll still be available for people. But this is your chance to pitch anything you want, from ideas, ideology, upcoming projects, anything that you want. Go ahead. This is your platform now.
All right. Well, I am going to keep it short and sweet. You can find all of my links at teenytinytaylor.com. And the only thing that I want to really say is, if you are hesitant to subscribe to my OnlyFans because you think that it is just porn, it's not. It's a place that I love having conversations with people that are navigating their own emotions, trying to figure out how to bulldoze their own boundaries and face fuck their shame. And that's probably one of my favorite parts of having that platform. And so just don't shy away based on where you think it lives.
I love that. I love that. We're gonna have to rename this to Everyday Taylor. That's what we're going to have to do. We're going to do an Everyday Taylor segment on Everyday King. And it's just going to be those great words and pearls of wisdom for everybody. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Like, subscribe, and share. And next time, maybe we'll do a video. That means I would have to like get dressed up so I can look nice because, you know, Taylor's amazing. And I want to be able to match her vibe. If we do a video interview, I may have to go buy myself a Face Fuck the Shame shirt so we can shamelessly plug that saying and make it. We should make that a hashtag. Is that a hashtag? Have you made that a hashtag yet?
You know what? I probably haven't. And now that you're saying it, I'm like, maybe we're making this shirt together. Maybe that's what's happening in this moment.
I am down for that all the way. Well, thank you once again for doing this interview. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we will check you later. All right. That was another episode of Everyday King. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed providing it to you. Now, if you like what you heard, you want to support the content, you want to support the creator, I always have links in the description. And if you want to help the podcast out, follow, like, favorite, suggest it to other people, share it. You can also donate so I can bring you more of the quality, the fun, and the enjoyment that you love. See you later, Space Cowboy.